We're going to get underway. Thanks everyone for joining us for this webinar, Equal Citizenship and Due Representation, the Drive for Political Access by Israel's Arab Community. I want to say hello to everyone in the US joining us, in Israel, in Palestine, and in lots of other places in the world. You've joined us for the latest installment in Conversations with Israel and Palestine, which is a series of informational webinars that brings voices from Israel and Palestine to an American and international audience. And this provides an important link between progressives in the Middle East and those in the US and around the world. My name is Ron Skolnick. I organize these webinars on behalf of Partners for Progressive Israel. And before I hand it over to today's discussion moderator, I'll just inform you that Partners for Progressive Israel is an American not-for-profit organization. It's dedicated to the achievement of a durable, just peace between Israel and its neighbors, and that includes an end to Israel's occupation based on a two-state solution. Partners supports Israelis working to ensure social justice, civil rights, equality, and Jewish-Arab partnership. And Partner seeks to deepen Americans' understanding of Israel's and Palestine's complexities so that they can better advocate for a progressive Israeli future. Partners is glad to be bringing this webinar to all of you for free. If you like it and you want more programming like it, please visit progressiveisrael.org. And if you are able, please make a contribution. Let me just mention as well, programming note. Partners for Progressive Israel is going to be holding its annual Israel-Palestine Symposium. And once again this year, that's going to be via Zoom. It's going to be held over 7 Sundays, starting on July 11. This is a remarkable opportunity for folks, even without traveling and getting on an airplane, to meet young Israeli and Palestinian activists or dialogue with Knesset members, maybe even cabinet ministers this year. Visit the Gaza, the West Bank, and East Jerusalem digitally, of course, and discover and chat with folks and NGOs working for social justice, equality, and peace. So all that you should check out also at progressiveisrael.org. So let me now introduce, so we can get underway, our panelists and moderator. So Dr. Anwar Mahajne is an assistant professor at Stonehill College. She's a political scientist specializing in international relations and comparative politics with a focus on gender, religion, and Middle Eastern politics. Dr. Mahajan's work has been featured in a whole host of places. I won't recite them all, but they include the Carnegie Council for Ethics and International Affairs, Foreign Policy, Haaretz, and 972 magazine. Our second panelist is Jack Khoury. He is the Arab Affairs Analyst and Correspondent for Haaretz newspaper. And he is also the head of the news division for the Arabic language Radio Al-Shams in Nazareth, and has been doing that since it began broadcasting in 2003. Jack is one of the best known reporters and news anchors in the Arab media in Israel. Last but not least, Taher Abu Ras is a PhD candidate at the Department of Government and Politics at the University of Maryland. And he's also a fellow at the Guildenhorn Institute for Israel Studies, where he researches Jewish political identity in Israel. So let me pass it on and get the discussion underway. Taher, I'm handing things over to you. I'll be back at the end to wrap up and say goodbye. Have a great discussion.
All right, thank you very much. Good afternoon to all of those of you who are in North America. Good evening to those of you in Europe or in the Middle East. As Ron noted, I'll be serving as the discussion moderator for the next 60 minutes or so. Just to organize things for you guys for about the first 40 minutes of this webinar, I'll be the one posting the question to our two panelists. But after that, we'll be answering questions that you guys have in a Q&A section. I want to encourage you guys to type in your questions at any time. All you need to do is just look bottom of your monitor for the icon that reads Q&A. In some of your cases, you may need to touch your screen or run your mouse over it. Then click on the icon and type your question in the small box that appears. The webinar won't disappear or be disrupted. Don't worry about that. Just please note that the viewers' microphones are turned off and questions can only be asked when typed in this way. All right, so let's just dive in directly. Before I get into the questions, I just wanted to give a brief background to our discussion today, even though I'm pretty sure that the overwhelming majority of you are quite well informed. So obviously this government is a very historic government, no matter your personal feelings and views towards it. And there are many reasons why this new government is a very historic one. But one of the main reasons, and that's what we're here to discuss today, mainly has to do with the fact that this is the first time in Israel's history that an Arab party will be an official member of the coalition. There has been in the past cooperation between Arab parties and Israeli governments, but this is the first time that we actually have an Arab party in the coalition. This Arab party is obviously the, what in Hebrew is called the Ra'am party, or its abbreviation in English is the UAL, the United Arab List. The United Arab List is a party that its main member is actually the Islamic movement in Israel, or if you wish, the Muslim Brotherhood in Israel, if you want, that entered a coalition with a few other political forces in the Arab community, particularly a well-known mayor of the Arab city of Sakhnin, and they decided to run independently from the joint list. The United Arab List, or the Ra'am party, was part of the joint list in the second election of 2019 and in the election of 2020, but they decided towards the end of 2020 to split from the joint list and run independently. The main reason they decided to run independently is that they believe that they should be able to negotiate with both the right wing and the left wing in Israel, as opposed to the joint list. I believe that any venue for real cooperation with Zionist parties can only happen with the Zionist left. And true to their promise, the Ra'am party, after the elections, once they did pass the threshold and receive four seats, did begin negotiations with both the right wing in Israel and also what is known as the Coalition of Change, led by Yair Lapid. They first began their negotiations with Benjamin Netanyahu, and there were even some strides made in negotiations with Netanyahu. However, right-wing partners of Netanyahu, particularly from the religious Zionist wing of his coalition, refused any kind of cooperation with the Ra'am party, which really left Ra'am with only one option, and that is to partner up with the government of change, as it's known in Israel, led by Yair Lapid and Naftali Bennett. And about 10 days ago, they did reach that agreement. And once the government was sworn in on Sunday, Ra'am, or the United Arab List, had officially become the first Arab party to ever join a governing coalition in Israel. So that's what I will be wanting to talk about with our two distinguished members, panelists today. And I would like to begin with Dr. Anwar Mahajni. So my first question, Anwar, is very, it's a very basic question, but I think it's one that's very important. Do you think, as a result of Ra'am joining this governing coalition, do you think that the Arab vote and the Arab parties in general have been finally legitimized, or is this only a one-time thing? I mean, after all, we do know that the whole idea of Arabs joining a coalition is something that makes many, many communities in Israel very uncomfortable. Up until today, the government is being mocked partially for joining with an Arab party in coalition. But do you think that that's it? We have now crossed this threshold, and from here on out, it will be normal for Arab parties to be part of the coalition and for Arab votes to be legitimized in Israel.
Thank you. But before I start answering this question, I want to add a few things to what you said about the United Arab List, Ra'am. So Ra'am is defined as an Islamic movement in Israel. They publicly say that they're not affiliated with Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood. But I wanted to distinguish between two branches of the Islamic movement. We have the northern branch and the southern branch of the Islamic movement. They split in 1996, I think. And the difference is the northern branch, which is mainly based in Umm al-Fahm, decided not to engage in elections. So they decided to still work on issues related to Israel, Palestine, the Palestinian struggle, specifically focusing on Jerusalem, right, and protecting Al-Aqsa Mosque and all the holy sites there. However, the southern branch of the Islamic movement decided to actually run for election. And the reason I wanted to mention that is to tell you a little bit about their pragmatism and the history of pragmatism in the movement that now is based, like Ra'am is the political wing of the Islamic movement. So we have the movement itself, and then we have the political wing, which is the party at Ra'am. So just to kind of create a few distinctions between the northern southern branch and then the political party itself versus the movement, right? The political party still is tied to the movement. That's why we hear the Shura Council, which is pretty much just a council that kind of debates certain issues. But I know when you see a Shura, everyone starts thinking of Sharia law and like other alarming things or narratives in the West. So just to kind of highlight that history and the pragmatism of the movement and where it started, right? I actually read a few interviews with Mansour Abbas where he mentions his intellectual influencer that he relies on, and it's Abdullah Nimr Darwish. And he used to be kind of a radical who decided that eventually the best thing to do is political engagement. And he keeps mentioning that over and over and over again to justify why Ra'am eventually decided to kind of negotiate and join the coalition. Another thing that I also wanted to add to what you said is that when Arabs were kind of considered to join or help the government, that was under Yitzhak Rabin. And we know they didn't officially join, they supported from outside the government. But we saw how that, first of all, Rabin was assassinated. And then Netanyahu emerged on the political scene, and up until 10 days ago. I don't know what's going to happen later. I'm hoping we'll eventually see the end of Netanyahu, but he could cause a lot of trouble in the opposition too, which he's starting to, right? So to say that, is that the end? Is that like kind of gonna be the new era of new Arab politics inside of Israel? I'm a bit skeptical. So I'm curious, I'm watching what's happening because it's a new coalition, as you said, it's unique in a lot of ways. We have kind of the first prime minister wearing the kippah, we have Yair Lapid with centrist, and then the extreme settler, you know, pro-settlements, pro-like extreme right guy, and then an Islamic party coming together and forming a government. And I think that's very unique. I think there is promise on the areas when it comes to funding. I think we had this discussion before that they chairing the Knesset committee, interior committee, gives them access to decide on budgets and interior issues that are very, they're very important for communities, especially in you know, the Negev and Bedouin communities, and kind of recognizing villages could be substantial if that happens, right? These are promises. So there is so much potential, but that means also that any failure to achieve any of these potentials could cause a disaster. Like that could be dramatic and radical and could affect politics for decades to come, right? So first of all, I know a lot of people are skeptical about the stability of the government. We don't know if it's going to last even for Yair to be prime minister. But the consequences for Ra'am could be drastic and dramatical, right? And also, it's important to point that Ra'am doesn't represent the whole Arab society. It's just a small group of people that voted for Ra'am. They had 4 seats, of course. But then we have other parties that you mentioned, right? The joint list, which we have Tal, Balad, Khadash, all of, you know, these different groups that have different views on LGBTQ issues, on women's rights, on the Palestinian issue. I feel like there is more of a consensus there that two-state solution is what they need. But I think that, does it really represent all Arabs, or is that a new era? I highly doubt that. I'm very skeptical. I think, honestly, the funny part, I think Ra'am, when it comes to issues such as women's rights, LGBTQ rights, they're closest to religious Zionist groups than they are to like other Arab groups, secular Arab groups. So I think that I'm intrigued, but I'm watching closely. And I think a lot of good things could come out of it, but if this doesn't work out, it could also be very damaging for Ra'am, for the perception of the community. But one other thing that I want to talk about, as somebody who studies Islamic movement, and I study the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, and I study other Islamist groups in Nahda, in Tunisia, and all of that, I think it's fascinating, the debate about Ram now. We're moving away from terrorist Islam, you know, from terrorist groups to partners. And that also has impact on the perception of Islamist movements in general, not only within Israel, but outside of Israel. And what that says about what kind of system can accommodate these movements, right? Where they can be elected and absorbed and actually be part of the governance, but without without creating a threat to democracy. And that's what I'm also paying attention to as somebody who studies Islamic movement in general and institutions, that kind of what type of institutions could absorb them without, risking damage for democracy in general. So that's my thought there.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. And personally, I would actually agree with you on the fact that for Mansour Abbas and Ram, this is a zero-sum game. They either succeed or they either fail. There is no middle way for them to go. And I think it's also very interesting what you mentioned about the Islamic movements moving from being terrorist organizations to partners. We're seeing this not only inside Israel, but even at a wider scale. And it's interesting. I want to obviously focus more on what's going on in the Arab-Palestinian community in Israel, but you mentioned the Al-Nahda movement, which is the Islamic movement in Tunisia. So it's interesting how they became partners for not only secular groups in Tunisia, but even for European powers. The president of France, Macron, has even met with their leader, the Islamist leader of Tunisia, Ghannouchi, and he's considered him, because he's a moderate, he's considered to be a partner and whatnot. So it is part of this global wave of some Islamist movements becoming more mainstream and being more accepted into this liberal game of politics, if you wish. But I do agree with you that when it comes to the Arab votes and the Arab parties, this is very, very interesting time. And it's either going to succeed phenomenally or it's either going to fail miserably. Time is going to tell us. And that's why that's actually a good segue to move to Jackie here to talk about this a little bit. So Jack, the same question. I actually saw today in your website in Haaretz that the Ra'am party refused to support extending the what is called the Ichud Mishpachot in Hebrew, or uniting family laws, right? Which prevents Palestinian citizens of Israel from marrying Palestinians in the West Bank and those two couples living inside Israel. This is an issue that there's a Zionist consensus about inside Israel, but now that there's a 61 government of only 61, Ra'am can all of a sudden prevent it from moving forward, and that's what they're doing right now. So my question is, all these nationalist issues about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and whatnot, is there a real, do you think that this, that the events of the last week, Ra'am joining the coalition, does this legitimize Arab parties for the future and legitimize the Arab vote inside Israel? Or are these issues like the Ichud Mishpachot and other issues will come back to hurt and therefore delegitimize the Arab parties and Arab votes?
Okay. First of all, thank you for inviting me. You hear me very well? Okay. First of all, I you know, for me, English is the third or fourth language, so I hope that I can give you all the information, because you know, there all the day from 4 o'clock until now, I'm just talking in Arabic and writing in Hebrew, and just now to translate to think in English and to give you the real answers about what happened. What I say that regarding of the legitimacy for the Arab vote, I think is a glass ceiling was broken. However, it was not broken completely, because the issues, in my opinion, doesn't have to do with the vote only. But what you said now about the Ehud Mishpahot, but it's a very sensitive issue. What we talk about the national law, if we talk about the occupation, if we talk about, even for the homophobe issues that they call all the time, they call it. So I don't know what they do in the Knesset after 2 weeks when one of the parties just started to talk about this. So what I hear from the Ra'am members, that they say, let us work every day about the about the main issues for money for the municipality, for the negative for the negative villages there, for even now the crime, what we said every day about, every day we have a crime in one of the villages in the north or in the central or in the Negev. So Ram, just I think they go for poker political issue. If they get their money, if they get for the municipality projects, if they go for, you know, the small issues and they can't go in 5, 4, 6 months to their vote or base, electoral base, and they to tell them, you know, we just starting to be to bring you something, I think it will be okay for them. But I, you know, we're not in the in Sweden or Norway, we are in the Middle East, we are inside Israel, and I don't know that they can accept any, you know, one of the, just what happened now in Sheikh Jarrah or what happened in Damascus Gate. And this, just one boy, now I have, when I talk to you, I think they the army shoot a little boy near Shechem. So it's very difficult issues. And I think it's very difficult to say, okay, they succeeded in what they go for it and or they fail, because in the Arab community, there are so many people that think that Mansour Abbas is right. Okay, we can't all the time just waiting for the solution, for the two-state solution. We can't just be in our homes and waiting for the peace process. We're waiting for the U.S., for the U.S. president to make something to go for the main issues. We want to live in our villages with safe villages. We want to build our houses. We want to our children be in, you know, educate, very education in the schools. So it's very difficult issues that if they succeeded even in small things and they don't have any, you know, bombs in the political bombs in the road, they can't go for 5-6 months and they said, okay, we succeeded in this, but we need four years or maybe 2 years to continue. But you know what happened in the last month in May, you know, it's we said that Mansour Abbas was finished in political issue, but he can't go back now, and he was is in the coalition with Naftali Bennett and Yair Lapid. So it's very difficult to say it's okay, we have broken this glass ceiling, what we said, but we just wait for what will be happening in 2 months, what just taking for 2 months, 3 months, and we can understand if it's the right road for them or they make a big mistake.
Excellent, thank you. First of all, your English is very clear and very good. Personally, I would actually agree with you. This is something that is going to take time. We're going to have to wait and see, but the behavior of the Ra'am party here is going to be very important to know if in the future the Arab vote will indeed be legitimized in Israel, and as a result, Arab parties being legitimized. And that takes me to my second question, actually, Anwar, Dr. Mahajmi, sorry. That's about the coalition agreement itself. So as we all know, the coalition agreement between Ra'am and Yair Lapid and Naftali Bennett was very interesting. It's different than what we're used to in parliamentary politics, where usually, you know, most members of coalition, they get ministries and they become members of cabinet and whatnot. In this case, that's not the case here. The case here is all money, 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 maybe one or two committee heads of committee chairs, basically, in the Knesset. What do you think about this agreement, first of all? Do you think that the agreement is a successful one in the sense that it will allow the Ra'am party to receive substantial achievements for the Arab community or not? What do you think?
So I just wanted to add a few things to what Jackie said, and I will talk about the coalition agreement. Talking about kind of people, like public opinion in the ground, and I know a lot of people try to avoid kind of talking about Palestinians inside of Israel versus Palestinians in the West Bank of Gaza, because, you know, they're saying historically, you know, that's a strategy to separate the communities. But in reality, we do experience different realities, right? And people on the ground with high gun violence, with, you know, worrying about jobs and food and putting stuff on the table, they still care about the Palestinian issue. And it's a main concern, especially when there are big events such as what happened recently when we saw during Ramadan, right? And that kind of instigated a wave of activism on the ground, youth activism on the ground, that was very substantial actually in bringing and changing the narrative in the US about what's happening down on the ground. And our youth are very sophisticated nowadays with social media, speaking multiple languages, crossing borders, and kind of communicating to the Arab community, like Arabs outside of, you know, Palestine, Israel, to the wider Arab world, and also speaking to Western audiences. And they're very efficient at doing that. So I think that, the Palestinian issue, resolving the issue and coming to a peaceful, sustainable, peaceful resolution is still important. But at the end of the day, if you ask the average kind of, and we need to kind of, you know, kind of divide it into class, education, because we always combine all Arabs together, all Palestinians in Israel together. But there are differences across class, you know, education, background, even across cities, families, right? And I think we need to start thinking more critically about the needs of the community, because we have multiple communities, right? Multiple or different groups within the community with different needs and different demands. We saw the youth on the ground being very upset with what's happening, but that doesn't mean that a lot of people are not intrigued by what Trump is doing. But also there are a lot of people who are very upset with what Trump did because of the youth, like the timing of the youth organizing with Ram joining the coalition, that wasn't the greatest time. And of course, you know, death to Arabs, the rallies and marches and kind of attacks on Arabs, Palestinians inside of Israel, where people were afraid to go to work for the first time in years, right? That kind of created a reminder for every Palestinian in Israel that no matter how much you try, or the illusion of kind of assimilation or kind of coexistence, let's not use assimilation because it's a big word, the illusion of coexistence is very, it's fragile, right? It's not true. As soon as like something happens, you're constantly reminded that, oh, you're a second class citizen, you're not fully integrated. No matter how much you have Jewish friends, you go to work in Tel Aviv, you eat with them, you're still not 100% Israeli, right? You're still not 100% a citizen. That's a constant reminder. And that's why I think with Ram, now it's fragile, because it could either help kind of try to start healing the community from what happened, or it could create even more kind of rift between the Palestinian community in Israel and the Jewish community in Israel. Now, my issue with the agreement with Ram, first of all, of course, there is no ministry. I think though they get accessing the kind of the positions they had with budgeting, with even having a representative in Misrad Rosh HaMishala, and the the Prime Minister's office, is substantial. We also saw, even though I saw with Fridges from Meretz, we have an Arab MK, which is good. It's great. But it could be better. It always could be better, right? And I think they got the best they could in the circumstances that we have. They made lots of concessions. But then what is the alternative? And that's what I'm thinking. We had the status quo, but nothing has changed. And that's why I'm intrigued. I'm not saying I'm 100% pro what they did, but I'm just curious to see what happens, because it's something new. And every time something new happens when it comes to the issues in Israel-Palestine, it's an old, it's 73 years old, even, I mean, a bit older too, if you go back to before the 1948. Constant kind of behavior, people kind of sticking to their views on what's happening, or sticking to their ways without trying new things. And that's why I'm curious about what's happening. I think it could have been better, but I think they did the best with what they could.
You know, Thayer, if you I can't just tell you, today I talked to so many mayors, Umm al-Fahm and Ara and Arara, and they just began to make, you know, to talk about with the government, the new government officers, and what they say, they talk about budgets, they talk about money for the municipality. And I just ask, what is the difference between mayor and Knesset member? And it's, I think it's very important to say that Knesset member is a political leader. He just now, you know, influence about the big issues, about the occupation, about two-state solution, about the strategy for the state, not just talking about money and give me money from our municipality and for just to be living in our village safely. It's very important issues, but I think it's very important to see that the mayors are, they are the leaders in the, you know, common leaders, and they are local leaders. And you have your Knesset member, and you know, we have, you know, the mayors are the in local leaders, and the Knesset member just needed him to be up there, you know, in the top of the leaders of the state and to influence there. But what Mansour Abbas and Ram, they go for the mayors to make their job. I think it's very important because they began in very lower issues. And when we talk about, you know, if in 2 years now we negotiate with the Knesset members, they started with to talk to me about money, about something like, you know, pieces of something, very small issues. So I think it's very difficult to say they succeeded or not, but I think we will wait for what I said in the beginning, is for 3 months, 4 months, and we said, if okay, they're going for something, and it's just collapse everything. And sorry, I said to say that not, I'm not optimistic about this.
Yeah, no, I agree, Jackie. It's we need to wait and see what's happening, and it holds so much promise, but also so much kind of disastrous consequences as well. And I have to add, I do believe, you know, a lot of people are also critiquing for not using the language of occupation, talking about the end of, like, the agreement didn't include anything about a two-state solution, you know, one state, whatever, the end of the resolution for the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, or, you know, this term has been critiqued because a lot of people calling it a struggle, right, for liberation. But, you know, I do, honestly, I'm one of the people who believe that no resolution will happen without the integration of Palestinian community in Israel fully with the Israeli system. Because if we can't do it inside, we can't do it on that. We can't do it anywhere, right? And I really do think that the key is a full integration of Palestinians in Israel. And that being culturally Palestinian with Israeli citizenship should not contradict anything, should not contradict, like, your cultural identity should not contradict your citizenship, and you should not be questioned all the time. And if Jewish Israelis, regardless of left, right, can't, like, come to that conclusion, then the end of this is not even in sight.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, Israel needs to succeed in integrating her own citizens before it tries to kind of reaching a rapprochement with the people in the West Bank and Gaza. But Jack, just very quickly, I wanted to ask you about this coalition agreement. And you're somebody who knows the Knesset well and how the Knesset functions. Ra'am got the chair of the Interior Committee, Yoshev Rosh Vadat Apnim. And from your experience, do you think that this position will be very influential in politics? Will they be able to get a lot of things from it? Or is it not a very big deal? How do you feel about this?
You know, I think it's very important to talking about these issues. They can't, you know, open the doors for the ministers if you want to talk to the ministers. You know, Ayelet Shaked and Lieberman and all the ministers are not in the left ring. They are right ring. It's very difficult. But they also, they know that if they go for just not to say no for everything, it will not be for them a government in a few months. So I think if they're talking about small issues, and especially with money, with the budgets for the municipality, even for the Negev, for the villages there, it will be okay. They can't give them the money. You just, you know, remember, Thaer, if we're talking about 15 million shekel, but it's for 10 years. And the budget for the Israeli state, it's 470 million shekel. So it's not a big money for 10 years. So I think if they talking just about money, about land, for the villages, and we're talking about not big pieces, you know, for just to build houses in your town, Kalansawa, in my town, Fasuta, it's not very difficult issues. I think when they go for the national law or for they talking about, you know, very sensitive issues about the Palestinian issues, about what happened in Gaza, what happened now in the West Bank, and they goes also for the Nakba laws, for the national law, I think it's very will be very different. But I think Mansour Abbas just started to be just weeping with the main issues and to give the people his basic electoral basic that he want in 2 months, 3 months, maybe in a year, tell them I have succeeded with 1, 2, 3. And I think the most the important issue now, it's I talk today with Sigalovich. He's in the Ministry of the Bitahon Pnim.
Deputy Minister of Internal Security, which is the police.
And they talk about change in few weeks. So if you know, every day we have a crime, it's very sad to say that, but if they give the people just to be feel more safe in few months, and you say that they arrested all these boys and guys with a gun and shooting every day, as he can't say, okay, I can't solve all the problem in 1 year, but I give you something. So it's very important for them, but I think it's also important what they just give the people or their people every day. If it's very important issue and small issues, as I think it all the government, this government will go with a small issue and a status quo that not going for big issues, because every time they go for the big things, it will be collapse.
Interesting. Now, since we've talked a little bit about Ram, I think it's important we talk about their nemesis. Maybe some people will say their enemy, which is the joint list. We all saw in the, for those who follow the conference voting live on TV, they were able to see that some members of the joint list, particularly the two main heads of it, Ayman Oudi, Ahmed Tibi, and a third member, Osama Saadi, did not participate in the first round of confidence voting. They wanted to make sure that this government will pass. And only once they saw that it's passing, then they voted no confidence in the government. So we were able to see that the joint list is not completely, you know, united on how to deal with this government. Some people like Ahmed Tibi want to cooperate with it. You know, the Balad party, on the other hand, does not want to cooperate with it. Hadash, it's unclear. I mean, we all know that Ayman Oudi has a very good relationship with Yair Lapid, and I'm guessing he's hoping that Yair Lapid will at one point become prime minister, and it'll be easier for him to cooperate with such a government. So I wanted to ask you both, beginning with you, Dr. Mahajni, how do you see the joint list, basically, here? Where did the joint list stand after this week's development? And by the time the government falls, who do you think will come out looking better in the Arab community? So once we go to a next election, who's going to be looking better, the Ra'am party or the joint list?
I think the joint list in a strategic location, right? They can choose to cooperate when these issues are, you know, matter to the community. If I were, let's say, I'm an outsider, right? I'm outside, so I'm protecting myself from government failure. If that fails, then I'm protected this way. But I wouldn't be against cooperation and collaboration when it's necessary, when it's on issues that are very prominent and important for the community, right? And I think that's where I see them headed, that when it comes to issues that are very close to the community and its need and their voter base, they will collaborate. And I'm hoping that that's what would happen, because otherwise the joint list will lose more seats than they lost last election. And they know now that they need to be responsive. If anything that the elections, you know, if the United Arab List told us is that, first of all, nobody really know, like people, the joint list was illusional or delusional about like what people needed and wanted, because a lot of people were, oh, he won't get like even one seat, he won't make the cut, right? But he did, because Mansour Abbas kind of understood what his voter base needed. And that's, the demands are the same as other, you know, other members of the Palestinian community. They're the main issues. And if they don't collaborate on these issues and cooperate with them on these issues, they will look bad, of course. But they have to do it strategically. They're protected. So if anything bad happens, they're like, well, you know, we didn't join the government. But if they also want to ride that wave, they can collaborate and make sure that this partnership is not, they're not fully kind of disconnected.
You know, Thaer, the join list is in bad situation because they essentially, and Ayman Oudi in particular, who began to this cooperation with Israeli, with Yair Lapid, and they met them, and we, all the time we look that Mansour Abbas is with Netanyahu, Ayman Oudi and Ahmed Tibi with Lapid. And but I think that Naftali Bennett to be the prime minister, Hadash, they can't vote for him. It's very difficult. But I think when it's what I agree with Anwar, I think that when it comes to issues that are good for the Arab community, they might vote with the government. But with such issues that they will vote against the government, you know, they can say, okay, we are not in the coalition. So if the Israeli force attack in Gaza, they will said, we told you that we can't vote with this government. But if tomorrow with talking about money for the municipality, I think will be, I think they will vote. And what you say that waiting for the last minute to how to vote, because, you know, guys, we just to remember, we have two prime ministers, or Netanyahu or Naftali Bennett. We don't have Nelson Mandela or Naftali Bennett or Benjamin Netanyahu. This is the what happened in Israel. You know, I just said waiting for the left wing to come in few years, and they said, okay, we have our program, we have our program for the peace process, we can go now for the election with how to say it, Amud Fakhri. Should we call Amud Fakhri, Thaer?
Anwar, I'm going to need your help here. The spine backbone.
Yes, backbone. So it's very difficult for them also. I think that I talk with them and they said, okay, we can't vote with the Smotrich and Ben-Gvir and to give Netanyahu the card for the prime minister office, but also we can't go and vote for Naftali Bennett. So they, I think they will wait and they will vote about the how the issues will come in the Knesset. If it's very good for their base, electoral base is very important, they will say, okay, we can go for it and we vote with the government. But if they go for political issues and a national load, something like that, I think they will be very difficult to them to vote with, and they will vote against. Sorry.
Okay, thank you, you guys. I'm going to move now to the second phase. For the next 15 minutes, we'll have a Q&A session. And this is just a chance to remind people, anyone who has a question, would like to ask a question, please just click on the Q&A icon and put your question in here. So there are a number of questions that I want to get to. The first one, I want to talk with Jack, actually. And I think, Jack, this is a continuation of what we just last talked about. And that is, what is Ra'am's red line? Is there a red line for Ra'am where they say, okay, enough, we cannot take part in this? Because just in the last 48 hours, Israel bombed Gaza. There was the flag march in Jerusalem that came out, and they even attacked Arab journalists. I know an Arab journalist from Haaretz, Yanal Jabarin, was attacked. I don't know if you were there and you were attacked or not, but we've seen these things that are considered provocations in the Arab community. And yet Ra'am has not done anything about it. Is there a red line for Ra'am? Is there something that could, you know, this government do? And, you know, Mansour Abbas would say, as we say in Arabic and in Hebrew, khalas, I'm not taking part in this anymore.
I think if we go what happened in the last month, if we we get this another time, this scenario, they can't just, even if Mansour Abbas want to be in the coalition, I think his electoral base will say, that's it, we can't go for it. Because of that, what I said in the beginning is going for a poker game in the political issues in Israel. And he just wait fascinating. Last day when about what happened in Jerusalem before began all the Tahluchat Galim, Mitzad
Galim march,
the flag march. Mansour Abbas just said it's not okay, and he just have his announcing that he will be against this march. But I think it will be very difficult for him if this government goes now for attacking Gaza, and we see children dead in Gaza. If we have something in the West Bank, it's not the usual thing. And if one guy that killed, like what happened now in Beita near Shechem, I think it's okay. It's not just give us a chance for a month or 2 months. So I think it will be very sensitive issues. If he just in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, give his people something, and okay, we know that we are in very difficult government, because what he can say that, okay, I can now go out and this government fail, you get Netanyahu very soon, and Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, you don't have any solution. And I think when Ram feel that they can go for the election and they can get 4 or 5 members, they will even just for anything, they can go out and for the election. So I think it's very important to say that all the parties now in this coalition, they didn't need, they don't want election, because if they go to election, even Naftali Bennett and even Gideon Saar and even Yair Lapid, I think it's very bad a scenario for them. So they just waiting and waiting and waiting, and they hope that the Palestinian in Gaza or in the West Bank not going for anything that will be in crush in all the sides. And I think it's they wait just waiting for the Americans now to do something that to be in the status quo that we're talking about in the Middle East.
Anwar, I actually have a question here from your academic expertise. Could you maybe discuss Raham's agenda for Palestinian women in Israel? How does it deal with the issue of domestic violence, for example, inside the Palestinian community in Israel? And if I may add to that, maybe a little bit also about LGBTQ rights. One of the ultra-Orthodox politicians in Israel, Yaakov Litzman, was asked if he's worried about, religion and state in this new government, about more secularism. And he said, no, I'm not worried, because Ram is there to take care of this agenda. So the status of women in the Palestinian community with Ram, maybe a little bit about LGBTQ, how are your feelings on this?
Yeah, so I had this discussion with a few friends of mine. So women's rights and LGBTQ rights. When it comes to LGBTQ rights, there is no room for negotiations, no room for kind of reinterpretation of the text. Or when it comes to LGBTQ rights, sexual orientation issues, Ram, I think they had didn't they have tension with Hadash over supporting LGBTQ communities. So they definitely are, as I said, they're closer to religious Zionist parties than they are to other Arab parties when it comes to LGBTQ rights. When it comes to women's rights, they behave similarly to other Islamist parties who chose to engage in elections. So what they're doing, they're re-engaging and renegotiating with the religious text. So they're trying to reinterpret the text in a way that is more accommodating. So we saw, the Knesset member, the first one to wear the veil and kind of a representative, also was an elected member of Ram.
Iman Khatib.
Yes. So you see that they are pro-including women in kind of government. I mean, there was a push for it, of course. It's not like they did it out of their good intentions. And that's what happens, though, when Islamist groups engage in politics, is they start responding to what's happening on the ground and the changes that are happening on the ground. So when it comes to domestic violence, when it comes to women's representation, they're still conservative, but there's room for negotiations there and kind of responsive to religious texts and reinterpretation of the religious text in a way that it becomes more accommodating. It's not free. I wouldn't say they support women's rights and the full reintegration of women. They still believe in women being complementary to men, not equal to men, right? But did you see that there is room for negotiations when it comes to women's issues and women's representation, as long as that doesn't disrupt the women's role in the home, right? And modesty laws. So I think there is some room for negotiation when it comes to these issues, but they're still considered very conservative. And as I said, they're closer to Jewish religious groups than they are to, like, you know, Hadash or Balad or other more secular Arab parties.
You know, Thar, you just remind, because you, I think they can also see us in the state. You can look about the Israeli Arab in Israel in, you know, the view with American, because if you ask any Israeli, here is a Jewish state. The first of all, it's a Jewish state and democratic states for somebody, but it's not a citizen state. So we were just looking for that we are, first of all, it's a Jewish state. And in this Jewish state, you just, you know, thinking that you can be equal in very basic issues. As because of that, Ram go for this Nishad. Okay, we know that it's a Jewish state. We can change it now, and, you know, maybe for 14 or 15 years. I don't know why. And just waiting for to taking something. And it's very difficult, you know, even for the somebody in outside to understand how to say it in, you know, you are a Jewish state, in Jewish state, you are Arab Palestinian, you are Palestinian and Arab, you are Israeli Arab, you know, it's very difficult issues to just to recognize our, what we needed in this state. You are Palestinian, okay, why now you live in Kalansawa now, Palestinian, they are in Gaza or in Ramallah. So we are in a Jewish state, we are minority in the Jewish state, and we're just waiting to be equal. I don't know when it will be equal here in this state.
So that's actually a good segue, Jack, so I can ask you another question. Yes.
Sorry, before we move on, I also want to mention specifically domestic violence, and I want to put a caveat there. Islamist movements, Muslims, doesn't equal support for domestic violence, right? Let's not equate the two. Domestic violence happens in Jewish communities. Domestic violence happens here in the United States. I live in the United States. I'm well aware of the debates that are happening. So no party will come and say we support domestic violence, right? No political party that respects itself says that. Now, there are other ways where they might, like, kind of marginalize it or disregard it or not pay enough attention to it, but publicly to say we're pro-domestic, like, no party is going to say that. And I think the community is paying more attention to domestic violence, and we see that with more women entering, becoming more educated, and, you know, every Islamist, you know, every, like, that's a new trend in the Palestinian community in Israel, where we see women are even more highly educated than men in the community. And the more we see more women educated and entering the workforce, we still have a different, like, we haven't kept up when it comes to the workforce with the rates of education yet, but we see an upward trend. The more we do so, the more the debates are going to become, you know, to become prominent about domestic violence and domestic violence issues. And also the state has issues addressing domestic violence, shelters, how do you address the issues in the Arab communities that have been marginalized? Women have complained to police, but, you know, you don't hear responses. And if crime is there, and crime is associated with domestic violence, because there are the same kind of factors that come at play there, then you see the issue is not only community-based or movement-based, it's also structural-based, and the state plays a role in it as well.
Okay, since we only have 5 minutes, I'm going to go very quickly here. Jack, so you started talking about how Ram, you know, they're focusing on nisha or niche issues rather than, because it's a Jewish state and only afterwards it's a democracy and whatnot. But would that lead to changes in the Arab community? So one question that I have here is there an option from your expertise in the politics in the Arab community? Is there a chance for a third party in Israel? So we have the joint list on the one hand, we have Ra'am on the other. Is there any chance for a third party that could come up and, you know, have a new discourse, a new narrative to give the Arab community? Or are we just stuck with these two parties for the time being?
I think it's very difficult to talk about another party. And, you know, Thayer, every election they told about Jewish Arab party every day and every week and every month and every election we talk about a Jewish Arab party, and but it not succeeded, because I think the people, they don't need another party, they just need to be influenced in the decision in Israel. But I think one of the issues that they did didn't succeed until now that, you know, we are in the now in the another how to say it, when Azmi Bshara established Balad, it's, you know, it's very we can go back, but you know, it was about what happened in the USSR collapse and the Berlin collapse, and everything was changed, and we have the Madrid and what happened with the PLO and Israelis. So they, I think he succeeded because he just, you know, it was in the region, it's very difficult issues. They can't even help him for to make a party. Now, just in 20 years, 30 years, we just tried to hear about a new party and it didn't succeed. I think it will be okay to go, you know, with Hadash and Meretz if they can't go for something Jewish Arab state. But until now, I think also the religion vote is very, very. It's very, very important because the Islamic movement is just going for this election with also with, you know, in the religion religion issues. So I think it's very difficult to talk about another party. If they succeeded, we talk about Jewish Arab party, but they need, you know, to circumstances that will help them. Because if you go now for vote and, you know, Ahmed Tibi and Hadash or Ra'am will disappear from the election in 2 years, 4 years, maybe it's some success, but I didn't think it will succeed in 3-4 years from until now.
Yes, thank you for that, Jack. And I agree with you that change can only happen as part of greater change. And Balad is a good example because it took, you know, the fall of the Berlin Wall, the creation of a new world, which led to the Oslo peace process, which led to a new discourse in the Arab community. Maybe if something big happens like that, then maybe we can start seeing a change in the Arab community. My very final question, Anwar, for you, and you have 2 minutes. I'm sorry about that. I actually wanted to ask you about Issaoui Fridge. He is the third Arab minister, but only the second minister from a center-left party that is an Arab. We had Ayub Karra, and before him,
Saleh Tarif and Ghalib Majadli, yes.
Yes, and now we have Issaoui Fridge, who's the first one from Meretz. He took a very interesting ministerial portfolio, which is regional cooperation, which mainly has to do with, you know, projects with the Palestinian Authority and with Jordan and whatnot. Do you see any, do you think that his ministry in any way could be of any help for some of the issues that are dealing with the Arab community? And can he use this portfolio to strengthen Meretz's presence within the Arab community?
So I think Issaoui Fridge is an interesting character, and I've been paying attention closely to what he has been doing, because he's very pragmatic, he is left, but he's also, I would say, also close to the center in certain issues that I've noticed. I think he could be a good ambassador for a lot of things, cooperating. And as I said, I think Palestinians and Israel are essential for any kind of sustainable peace in the region, not only, like, I wouldn't say just in Israel, I would say like for the regional balance, because we are in a unique position, right, and a unique space where we navigate different contradictions and different systems, and we know how to navigate these systems. Now, I don't know how much of a role he's going to be on the make a change in the domestic, for the domestic Palestinian community, but I do think that he can be really important for a bigger narrative in the region about who we are, what we represent, and kind of maybe new possibilities. But that's very helpful, and I'm on the helpful side here, right? And I could be wrong, because, you know, institutions exist to restrict or kind of prevent progress in a lot of ways. They're there to maintain the status quo. And I think he has a lot of obstacles to overcome. I think with the rise of extremist right-wing groups screaming, you know, shouting death to Arabs, and, you know, Ben-Gvir and his like, and all that are going to be an obstacle for people like Issaoui Fridge to make any meaningful change.
I think Thaher Esaoui Fresh will be a good ambassador, especially for the Palestinian Authority. I think they just looking for somebody that they can talk to him, and he's now in a minister in this government. He's just not even more important for them than Mansour Abbas. And you can go to the Emirates, you go to Bahrain and these states, they can talk to him in Arabic and to explain him what they needed also in the Palestinian Authority. So I think he have a job, he can work, but I don't know how, you know, the Naftali Bennett or Yair Lapid or the, you know, all the government, Lieberman, and they let him, you know, work freely in this side. But I think it's very, but in the other side, he's very stressed. And we talked to him in the, this week because he know, and what I said in the beginning, if now the Israeli forces attack in Gaza, you know, he's a minister. He can't say, okay, I can't be there. It's very important and with very difficult issue for him. But if you talk to him, he just give me a chance. Give me a chance. It's what he said every day. As we have, I didn't think they have 100 days. They had maybe 100 hours.
that's a very good way to put it.
That's the thing, the important thing about people like Esaoui Fresh, they know they're taking risks. They know that they are. And that's why I kind of admire people like them who are willing to take these risks, even though on the expense of, you know, their career and like the perception in the community and everything, you know.
So with that, I think we're going to have to bring this conversation to an end. I would like to give you guys, each one of you, it's not a 1 minute statement to conclude your remarks. It's going to have to be a 20 second statement to conclude your remarks. Is there anything you guys want to conclude? Anwar, if you want to go first, anything like that is important to highlight in your opinion.
Yeah, so I think what I just wanted to say, of course, this government is new, unique, different in a lot of ways, but also will be a continuation of what we had before on the other side. Now, what I'm looking for is to see how, I'm looking for minor changes that could have bigger impact later on, right? And that's what I'm going to keep an eye for. I'm not going to keep an eye for a resolution to the Israeli-Palestinian question or a struggle or to the integrating or assimilating the Palestinian community in Israel immediately. But what I'm going to look for are the small changes that are happening within the community, civil society, perception-wise, language-wise, and see if that will lead to actually major changes eventually along the line.
Jack, is there anything you feel that is important to tell the listeners in 30 seconds or more or less?
Yes, what you said, Thad, in the beginning, you know, about the legitimacy of the Arab vote, I think I just hope that will be a strategic and very unique issue, and it's not just for, you know, until now, because it's very important for the members of the Knesset and the other party to looking for us as a legitimacy now in this election, and we just, you know, we go to peace and peace like a puzzle to maybe in our children will be in a best situation in decade. Thank you.
Inshallah, thank you.
Inshallah.
Ron, you want to join? Yes.
I joined. Thank you. Thank you, there. Thank you, Thaher Abu Ras, Dr. Anwar Mahajneh, and Jack Khoury for taking us deeper into a topic that certainly American mainstream media doesn't pay enough attention to and only beginning to get treatment from Jewish Israeli mainstream media. So thank you so much for this discussion. I just want to say also thank you to my colleagues at Partners for Progressive Israel for all their hard work behind the scenes making this discussion happen. And we hope all of you have enjoyed it. For those who missed the opening, and the links are still there in the chat, I'll just mention again before closing, Partners for Progressive Israel will be holding its annual Israel-Palestine Symposium. And once again this year, it'll be via Zoom. It'll start on July 11 and take place over 7 Sundays this summer. It's very special programming where participants can meet young Israeli and Palestinian activists. They can interact with Knesset members, They could interact with folks living in Gaza, West Bank, and East Jerusalem, and hardworking activists and NGOs working for social justice and equality. So take a moment while I'm still closing up. The links are in the chat, but if you miss them, just go to progressiveisrael.org and you can find your way there. Last but not least, Partners for Progressive Israel is delighted to bring this program and programs like it for free. If you want to learn more about other upcoming programming besides the Israel-Palestine Symposium, please visit progressiveisrael.org. And while you're there, if you can, please make a contribution. That's what makes these programs possible for us and for us to continue those efforts. So thank you, everyone. Stay safe. Thank you. I hope we see our panelists back again sometime soon. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Much appreciated.